My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. That's kind of appropriate. I'm still under construction, so. You want to see if I have poise on the fire, right, Bob? Okay. I want to thank this particular retreat for asking me to come out and once again share, you know, a bit of my experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank Bob. I want to thank Alan. You know, they were really diligent and making preparations and following up. I want to thank both the Mikes for picking us up from the airport. You know, I don't want to go through the long thank you deal, but those people were very important to me this weekend, and I really want to thank everybody. You know, you guys have shown a guy like me a welcome that you know, you guys demonstrate Alcoholics Anonymous. That's still important for me. You know, to feel welcomed and to get the hugs and to get the comments and to get all the people who came up and shared with me. I appreciate it. You know, thanks, Jay, for taking a moment to pray with me this morning. You know, and thanks, Tom. Where's Tom? He was sitting up. Oh, man, you know, Tom last night shared about being the oldest in the bunch, and I guess I'm the baby of the bunch, and I'm humbled, you know. And every time I get in the presence of, you know, I get the opportunity, not so much to soak in and to get the status that accompanies some of these people that are here, but to soak in the experience and the living experiences. And, you know, because that's what it is about for me. And Tom was talking about that last night. You know, I'm one of the ones, too, that I'm not really that interested in being a step technician. You know, Tom calls it a step mechanic. I like that. You know, dude, I'm just a 33-year-old man and a, you know, 33-year-old boy in a man's body, stumbling into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous without a clue of how to live. Had accomplished and achieved and acquired some things, you know, had been in the corporate, had done some stuff, but man, I was tore up when I came into the rooms. And what I wanted to, and at that time, I didn't even look for a new life. I just didn't want to keep doing what it was I was doing. And I got a whole lot more than I bargained for. And then here you guys grew me up and you continue to grow me up. And that's what it is if you're here this weekend. If you hear and you hear because you want to, you know, have an experience with some people that will enhance your ability to get up at a podium, and that's okay too. But what really takes place in a weekend like this is I come away from this being able to go back home and be a little bit better father, a little bit better husband, a little bit better friend, a little bit better sponsor, a little bit better sponsor, a little bit better man. You know, and I'm hungry. You know, I'm hungry. I was a hungry alcoholic. I was a greedy alcoholic. And I'm like that in recovery, too. You know, I can't get enough. And so to get the opportunity this weekend, you know, it's special for me. And I can never stand up at a podium and not do the most important thing I think that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome any of our new friends to this fellowship. I don't know how many we have. I know we have a lot of people who've been on this path for a long time, you know. But I want to talk if there's somebody out there that's new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're sitting out there and you're in the presence of so many people who make this thing look easy, I want to welcome you. I want to let you know if you feel like I felt, if you've done what I've done, if you've drank like I drank, this is probably the best step you can take from the cradle to the grave. And I mean our fellowship, our family, you know, the fellowship I crave. You know, I really want to sincerely welcome you on behalf of everybody in here. Let you know you never have to do anything else by yourself. You just entered a new family. You might have a first name. We all share the same last name. My name is Ralph, alcoholic. Welcome to the family. You know, get the opportunity to share, you know, And what I like, you know, thank you, Charlie, for the introduction, and thank you for reading that part of the third step, you know, the back part, the promises in the third step. In the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, what I like the most about this book is it does three things, and it does it at every one of the steps. First thing it does is it talks to me about why I need to take a step. I like the way Bill wrote it, and thank you, Gail, so much last night for putting some flesh on what it is that we do. You know, I had this idea. People talk about the book was divinely inspired. So sometimes you think that there were like this big circle of about 100 people sitting around with halos and, you know, and they're beatifically talking about, well, why we shall, well, you know, that is not, and you put some flesh on it, you know, and let them know that this guy's like me, you know, hustlers and, you know, promoters and, yeah, I know it's I know at the end of this rainbow there's some dollars going in Ralph White's pocket. I'm not going to say that because we're in this altruistic movement, but it's just a couple of crumbs far my way, you know. So I know that's how it was happening. Just think about it. If all of us got together and said, we're writing, oh, so, you know, it's, no, you don't have to put my name on it. But if you insist, you know, I would have been one of those people, you know. So it was you made it a real experience. You made it real. And the thing about the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, it was a looking back. You know, it's not a theoretical text. You know, it's not something where somebody brings forth a hypothesis, writes about it, and then we're going to go out and do case studies on these alcoholics to see if what we hypothesize is true. It's a looking back experience. The book was written after some experiences. Some cats got together like Gail was talking about last night, and it's a practical book. It's practical. You know, and most of what's written in there, it's not written because it's virtuous or it's the nice thing or the right thing. It's written because it works. And it was proven that what worked before it went into this book. And so one of the things that Bill does in the writing of the book that jumps out at me is, you know, for every single step, why I need to take the step, how to take the step, how to apply the step in my life, then the results I get as a result of applying that step in my life. The promises at the back of every one of these steps. And so at the third step, you know, I was thinking to myself, it is almost impossible for me to do third step without touching on one and two. Because I got to talk about why. You know, why would I take that step? You know, the third step is found probably starts on about page 60. And at the end of our reading that we do in most meetings, chapter 5, you know, it talks about you know, A, that we were alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was soft. You know, being convinced we were now at step 3. Being convinced of what? First two propositions, step 1 and 2. Conclusions I draw based on my experience. I hear a lot of people talking about doing the work on step 1. I did the work on step 1 when I was out there. I told you I came into the rooms at 33 years old, life in tatters. You know, I didn't have to come in here, listen to you guys and say, I guess I'll decide that I'm powerless over alcohol. No, alcohol decided that for me. Thank you very much. You know, admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And it took, that process was a long process for me. You know, when the book talks about the mind and body are remarkable mechanisms, you know, that described me perfectly because, you know, I went on about looking back, only time I can really see my experience for real. Looking back, I went on about 8 to 10 years longer than I should have. I mean, I had crossed the line way before I got here. Folk had been sick of me and tired of me way before I got sick of me. You know, so I had been doing that deal. And finally, there was a day, and I could remember thinking to myself, I'm like this, and I just guess I'm going to just be like this. I'm like this, and I guess I'm just going to be like this. Yeah, what? You know. Had done fully concede to my innermost self. So I had done that kind of concession, and I'm not going to stay long on 1 and 2. I had done come to that conclusion based on my experience. Then I get to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm able to identify the experience for what it was, because even though I had the experience, I didn't know the truth about the experience, bringing my brain. I thought that I drank so much because I could. I thought I had high capacity. You know, I thought I was a Trojan. And those of you who didn't, you don't do it like me because you poop us. You can't handle yours like me. I thought I had high capacity. No, you sit still, boy. What it is that you have is an allergy. You know, an insatiable appetite. Once you put one in, you cannot stop yourself. Huh? You know, why would you say that? And then I like the answer that I get in step. Look at your experience. Look at your experience. It doesn't matter what Tom Iverson said, or Bob Dylan said, or Bill Wilson said, or Dr. Bob said. Look at your experience. Okay, I can't medically account for why that happens. I don't know about the endorphins and the pleasure syndrome, all that stuff. But the book talks about it explaining things for which I could not otherwise account. I used to spend a whole paycheck every 2 weeks, and my wife would be on me. Why the hell can you not bring a dime home in your paycheck? And I would retreat behind that wall that I would retreat behind, and I'd be like, and behind my wall, I'd be thinking, how come I can't bring a dime home out of my paycheck? You know, and this idea that there's something physically different about me that shows up once I introduce something in me interests me. And when I examine that idea in the light of my experiences, looking back, when I came into this program and some people showed that to me, it made perfect sense to me. It made perfect sense to me. Every time I said, I'm just going to happy hour, I spent a whole paycheck. Every time I started out to just spend $20, I spent a whole chip paycheck. Every time I went out to get milk on a Wednesday, I might come back on Monday. All the time. You know, my experience, you know, abundantly confirmed for me when I introduced one anything, no matter where I had to go, what I have to do, who I had to see, no matter how great the wish and the necessity, my body would take over and I'd have to have another. So I got convinced of that proposition. And I realized that no matter how often I said I wouldn't do it again, the second part of that first step, you know, I kept doing it again anyway. You know, the mental obsession, the obsession that somehow someday I would control and enjoy. I couldn't stop because of my body, but you know, I mean, I couldn't start because of my body. I couldn't stop because my mind refuses to accept the fact that my body, I was powerless, you know, and that propelled me. And I, you know, I'm not one that had a lot of time spent in trying to get sober on my own. I never wanted to. I hear a lot of people talk about, I'm not as much in the countless vain attempts. I never wanted to. I wanted to moderate or slow down a little bit. I never gave any thought to not doing anything for the rest of my life. When Tom was talking about he was scared it might work, the idea of not doing anything for the rest of my life, oh my God. You know, who would want to? Why would you want to? You know, that to me was, and so, you know, that, you know, but I draw those conclusions based on my experience. Based on my experience, I draw the conclusion that when I take one, you know, I can't tell you when I'll stop. And I start again even when I don't want to. You know, I have this overpowering thought that crowds out any other thought to take one. You know, and that led me into that second step. And it too was a conclusion I draw based on my experience, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. I have a mom who's an old Southern Baptist praying mom. She's a praying lady. And she has 6 boys who were all in the life, and we damn near killed her. And my mom would be at church regularly and religiously. I was raised in church, and I was one of the ones that no matter what, but I'm a you gotta like me at all costs kind of guy. You know, that's my challenge, and that's always been my challenge, you know, to come out of that prison that I've been in much of my life, the prison of what I think you think about me, you know, and I'll do whatever it takes to form and shape and mold your opinion of Ralph. You know, I desperately want you to approve and like of me and like me. And so I would do stuff as a kid. I've always been a pretty bright kid. I always was a good learner. And, you know, I didn't feel like I was especially bright or intelligent. I just thought stuff came easy. So other people thought I was. And that's a scary thing because they're going to find you out. Because, Judge, I was a straight-A student, but I wasn't studying. And some stuff came easy to me. And as I got older and I graduated to different schools and I went to this university, and I really said, ooh, you really going to get found out because I'm busy during the week. Students were studying. Ralph was busy. And, you know, and all that gifted and naturally gifted stuff, those D's and withdrawals started coming up. And kind of, oh, that changed quick. But anyway, back in So I was always like that, and so I would go to Sunday school, and being a good kid and being the one to be liked and wanting to get the pats on the head, you know, I was always the one who could come up after Sunday school and recite the lesson, but it never meant anything to me. You know, I couldn't wrap my head around certain religious concepts. I just couldn't. They would go in here and they wouldn't resonate. Couldn't make myself. And, you know, I was talking to somebody, one of my sponsees on the phone, and I was talking about that whole concept, and they were about, well, it takes faith. Well, I can't make myself. You know, it just didn't. And I wasn't pursuing it that hard. You know, I was in the pursuit. I love when Bill talks about this story. My heroes were intellectual giants. I was in the pursuit of what Ralph can. If I don't know it, it ain't worth knowing. You know, I ain't trying to, you know, all this old religious stuff. It wasn't about fun. It wasn't about, you know. So when I said, I can remember my earliest vow. When I turned 16 years old, you'll never have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of anybody's church again. And I meant it. I meant it. And I was raised in, you know, in church. And so this whole idea of this coming to believe when I came, my mother had prayer partners, and they'd be praying for our boys all the time. We get in circles because eventually, now I had my own place. I was married. All my brothers did. And in about 1982 or 1983, all of us landed back in my mom's house. Me and my five brothers all got put out of our respective homes. And all six of us were at my mom's house. And we damn near killed her. We damn near killed her. And there would be times she might catch three or four of us at a time. And we'd stand in circles and we'd hold hands and we'd make vows and we'd make pledges. And we'd say, yeah, Mom, we're not doing this. Couldn't stop. I'd see my ex-wife and I'd see my little girl that was 2 years old and meant the world to me, and I wanted to be, because my daddy was an alcoholic that abandoned us, and I vowed I would never abandon my kids and I wouldn't be my daddy. And I'd see my little 2-year-old daughter, my ex-wife would bring over to the house on weekends because she was determined that I'd be able to keep a relationship, and I'd mean it with everything in me. I'm going to do right. I go on, you know, I would say, okay, for this baby, I know I can get right. And I kept on. I would lose jobs. I would get on probation. I was working in management. I was supervising people. I was leading the double life. I would go to work. I would get a probation because now I'm missing work. I got paid on Thursdays. Could never make it to work on Fridays. Couldn't understand who would, in their right mind, would have Thursday payday. You know, I did three inventories before I just got free of that. I just couldn't see it was me. Thursday payday was the problem. What is that about? You know, and so I would be there, and he would say, if you can't do no better than this, don't come around no more. So bosses would threaten me, and my wife would just beg me. My mom would be like, oh, me and my brothers would make pacts. I couldn't stop me. You couldn't stop me. When I came in and got this idea that if there wasn't a power bigger than me who could stop me, I'm in big trouble. I took step two out of desperation, and I took it out of what do I have to lose? I took it out of what do I have to lose, you know, and very simply put, I came to already believe. See, some of the stuff happens for me in a negative fashion. In the step one, you know, before I admit, you know, in that step two, I had a negative thing that happened. Before I came to believe in the power, I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been living it. I had come to believe that I'm just going to keep doing this ad infinitum. You know, some people talk about being scared of dying out there. I was scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Come to believe in the hopelessness and futility. It's a cold place to be, to live in a place of no hope. You know, and people will psychologists and shrinks and sociologists, they'll do a lot of talking about what's needed in the human condition. They'll probably talk about, you know, people need love and people need companionship and people need nurturing and people need society and a lot of things. But for a guy like me, my experience, it's a cold place to be to live with no hope. To live with no hope. To walk the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, knowing you're going to be out there tomorrow morning. To just know that Christmas has no meaning anymore. Birthdays have no meaning anymore. You become a next year daddy that on Christmas and birthdays, you're sitting somewhere in the places you sit and you think it to yourself, right about now they're opening presents. Next year I'm going to get that girl something. And that's a cold place to live with no hope. You're not working no more. You're not welcome at your parents no more. You're not going to parties no more. You're not looking forward to holidays no more. Every day is the same day. Every day is the same. That's a cold. I come from a cold place like that. Living with no hope. Coming to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been living it. And as I have been existing for real. And so I come into that thing, into that step two situation. And so then it came to me, and some people shared with me, you know, that coming to believe in a power greater than me. And last night, Tom put it so well, because the step doesn't talk about coming to believe in a power, came to believe that a power, you know, so coming to believe, but coming to believe that there was a power that was bigger than me really wasn't so hard when I thought about it, because I had already done that before I got here. I had come to believe that alcohol was already bigger than me. It was my master. I needed something bigger than it. I already had a power that was bigger than me. I needed a power bigger than it. Wasn't my mom. Had tried that. Wasn't the judge. Had tried that. Wasn't the boss. Had tried that. Wasn't my baby. Had tried that. Wasn't my wife. Had tried that. Wasn't my friends. Tried that. I needed a power bigger than alcohol. Came in the rooms. What I ought to lose. What do I have to lose listening to you guys? Tried the group first, and then I went with the rest of it. Bought the package. You know, I bought the package because I had something else that comes with buying the package for a guy like me. One thing that nobody can give me in these rooms in step one, willingness. Willingness. And for me, you can't talk willingness into me. You can't, you know, you can't lecture it into me. You can't put it into me. I can't go to seminars and get willingness. Guy like me, it's only one way I get it. Well, whoop the ass. I don't know no other way to put it. You know, I don't know any other nice way to put that one. It might be that way with you. So I don't even spend a lot of time trying to talk people. And then, you know, I did this thing 4 times before I came to stay. And that last time I came up in here, mine was nicely tenderized, you know. And I learned some things, you know. You know, because I learned some anatomical things that happened with me in that area of willingness. I learned that when my ass is raw, my mouth closes and my ears open. But when it starts healing, all of a sudden, those ears start closing and that mouth starts running. This last run, it was wore out enough that my ears stayed open long enough to hear some things. To hear some things. You know. And so I got on this quest, and, you know, and so it talked about step one and step two, conclusions I draw based on my experience. Being convinced we were now at step three. Which is that we decided to turn our will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to the care of God as we understood him. Sponsor, I'm standing on step three. What you mean turn my will and life over to God as I understand him? I don't understand him. 2 things you need to know about God to start this process. Number one, he is. Number two, he ain't you. More than enough for you to begin this process. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. What do I mean by that, and what do we do? First requirement is that I understand that I be convinced that any life, for me that I be convinced that my life, run on my will, can hardly be a success. My life, run on my will, is a train wreck waiting to happen. How you know? Look at your experience. Ralph, look at your experience. You ain't got to ask a lot of questions. If you're not convinced that your life, run on your will, can't be a success, you ain't got to go no farther. You ain't got to go no farther. If you're successfully running your life, don't worry about turning it over to somebody else. But for those few of you who might be like me, whose life is a train wreck most of the time, waiting to happen when I run it myself, let's talk about it. What do we mean by that, and what do we do? On that basis, me running my own life, I'm always in collision with somebody or something, even if my motives are right. And the book goes through a whole lot of examples. It's a, you know, Bill does a big metaphor in here. And he talks about the person being, then I'm like an actor. You know, we were at dinner last night and I was looking at Bob act out this third step experience. You sit over here and Alan, take the pictures from this angle and you guys sit up like this. And you know, I'm an actor. And the cool thing about, check out the way that Bill talks about looking at the third step, me running my life and all of y'all, you know, everybody else's life that's around me. Because the cool thing about this drama, and he says a little bit later on, hereafter in this drama of life, so he uses that analogy all the time. And in the drama that's Ralph White's life, guess what? I'm always the leading man. I never understand and I never allow for the fact that this is a big world and I'm interacting and intersecting a whole bunch of other people's lives. And guess what? In your life, you're the leading man. I never allow for the fact that maybe in your life this scene calls for me to just be a stand-in extra. You don't even have a speaking part. You know, you don't even have a speaking part. But for me, even if I'm in your play, no, you in the back, I'm the one in charge. You need to say your line. I love that analogy because it says I'm like an actor. Well, what actor is going to call? Well, some of them do get behind the cameras and the rest of that. But I'm the actor, right? But I'm also the set designer. I'm the lighting guy, I'm the writer, I'm the director, I'm the producer of confusion rather than harmony. You know, I like that part. So in this drama that's my life, now let's bring that to real life. In this drama that's my life, I'm almost always in collision with other folk because I'm always thinking, you know, and the book talks about I'm in this delusion that if I only manage better, I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world. Somebody in here right now feels like there are some areas or parts of my life that's in turmoil. Kids may not be acting right. Husband or wife ain't doing what I want them to do. Finances feel overwhelming to me. Feels like I'm in a dark place and it's going to take me a while to come out. And I don't know, you know, see, people always talk about, you know, I know that God is going to take care of me and I know that he's transformational. I know from my own experience that God can take a situation and the things that seem like adversities in my life are usually God's opportunities for me to grow. The things that seem to me to be the darkest places I've ever entered in my recovery, he's transformational and he's turned what seems to be the biggest adversity I could face into something different if I let it play out. I'm so busy stuck on a particular sentence or a page that I don't realize he's writing a chapter and I'm tripping because I'm on this page and I want it always to be just the happy ending part. I don't want to go through, you know, the crisis and I don't want to go through that. So, but I have enough experience, right? 21 years on this road, you know, I have some sober experiences that show me some of what I'm talking about. At 16 years sober, you know, again, Ralph's life run on his will. Just examples of Ralph's life run on his will. Hardly be a 16 years sober. Good intentions. Just like we talk about in the book. Our actor may sometimes be virtuous. His motives might be right. You know, he might be good intentions. 16 years sober. And we talk about a program of living that demands rigorous honesty. A manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. And there are layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of that. And it'll manifest itself in my life sometime looking back. I see it. What does this mean, Ralph? Manner of living that demands rigorous honesty. 16 years sober, I had an opportunity to get into this house. And this house was well beyond my means, but it afforded me and my family an opportunity to live in a manner in which we should be living. You know, I'm doing the thing. I'm going to work. I'm responsible. I'm sober. I'm smart people. I'm, you know, and okay. Ralph's thinking. Ralph's will. Want or desire meets opportunity. Oh, that's God's will. That's God's will. Look across the room. I like her. Ooh, she's fine. I like the way she looks. We get coffee out of the thing, and she smiles. God's will. God's will. It's got to be. Well, I mean, we coincidentally needed the coffee, but at the same time, come on. You know. So this place is a place that affords Ralph the opportunity to do what he really likes to do, which is look good. Be impressive, you know, even when I hide that under a good motive. Because not all the time is it under a bad motive. It's not a bad motive to want your family to have nice things, you know, to want your kids to grow up better than you grew up. You know, I grew up in a two-bedroom apartment with six boys in one room and my mother and father in another room, you know, probably about 620 square feet, you know. So it's not a bad thing to want to move into a house, you know, in a gated community. I mean, all the amenities and stuff. It's not a bad thing. And then to get the opportunity presented to you. You know, you can do this. You can do it. You can get in here. Now, you, being rigorously honest, talking it over with a sponsor, let's not check off either one of those things, by the way. Wasn't rigorously honest and didn't run this by anybody, you know. I'm a grown man. I can, you know. What? This is a no-brainer. No-brainer. You know. Okay, the note is this and utilities are this. And you, yeah, okay, I don't really bring that in now, but I'm a, you know, me and Cliff were talking, I'm a make-it-happen guy. I'm a make-it-happen guy. You know what I'm saying? And the delusion that happens for a person like me, a self-willed, run-riot person like me, this is the cold thing about it. That sometimes I do, or sometimes I believe I do. Sometimes it appears that I do. My daughter went to college undergrad at an expensive school, and I don't know how that happened, but Daddy said, oh yeah, this is something that is important to me, and somehow, some way, we're going to make this happen. Now, Ralph didn't make that happen. Ralph went to prayer. It was a good intention. It was a good, all kind of other stuff conspired. Family helped out and the rest. But that kind of stuff happened. But the way that presents for Ralph is a make it happen guy. Make it happen guy. So getting to this place, because I'm going to make it happen. Get up in there, spend a bunch of money getting in there to make, oh, just having, oh, yeah, let's do a housewarming, blah, 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 just the whole nine. About 4 months later, I had to look at the fact that you got to come up out of here. You can't do it. You can't do it. And I thought it was the most humiliating thing that happened to me in recovery. Had to move out of my house and move my family back into my mother's house. 16 years sober. Felt like I was homeless. Didn't see the blessing. You know, felt like I was homeless. Made a decision based on self that later put me in position to be hurt. Self will run riot. You know, making that kind of decision. But let's play the whole chapter out. Was supposed to move to my mom's house for 3 months, stayed there a year. And in that year's time, my wife and I were so busy thinking of how cramped we were and how we didn't have our own spot. And, you know, we're so busy into that that we were missing what was the reality of our life. Sometimes when I live in my head and not in my life, I miss it. I miss it. Because living in my life, I could be having the best time. But when I'm living in my head, I miss it. See, living in my life every day, me and my family, it was like an Ozzie and Harriet thing. We'd sit around, and I had never been with my mom as a grown person, responsible grown person, not that other guy when I was in the life, had never done that kind of experience. And me and my mom and my wife and my daughter, we'd sit around, we'd watch movies, we'd pop popcorn, we'd talk. We had a built-in babysitter. My wife and I were going lots of it, doing stuff. And my daughter slept in my mom's bed every night for a year. And she won't always have her grandmother, but she will always have that. And they've formed an unshakable relationship. And at the end of that year, when we were getting ready, we had got our other place and we're getting ready to move, and my mom called me and my wife back to her room, and she had tears in her eyes, and she was like, you guys have to leave. Because she was staying in her house by herself, and she, it's plenty of room, and we were crying. Because in the looking back, you know, maudlin and sentimental, I always do like that after the fact, right? You know, and so looking back, you know, and we were sad, you know, and looking back, it was one of my best years in recovery. And I was expecting, because of who I am, and impress you guys, style over substance anytime, I was expecting to feel more humiliation than I ever felt. Learned something in that year. I learned. See, God don't need my permission to change me. He does need my cooperation, but he'll change me without my permission if I just do some simple steps. This process will change me without my permission. Needs my cooperation, don't require my permission. And I have been changed without me knowing it. Have been changed without me knowing it. In my head, I'm still this really image conscious guy and the rest of this. But you guys have done something in me that I just free the undress. And I'm not an undresser. I'm a whole mind in. I'm not a tell you anything. But I just was up at sharing about stuff and it wasn't any power in it. And I never felt this shame about, yeah, I stay at my mom's, give my sponsor's number. Yeah, this is my mama's house. And it just, and nobody changed. Nobody looked down on me. And I didn't realize that didn't surprise me till later on. I just come to realize this is our society. What? You know, I had been changed without me knowing it. And I learned some valuable things during that year. That I am more than what I have. And I've always thought, because I come from nothing, that if I don't have something to give you, show you, buy you, that I don't have any worth of value. You know, and I didn't realize how that had been changed to me, and that I had the best currency and the most currency that any man here. I kept feeling like the most blessed man that I know even then, because I was rich and folk who cared about Ralph White for real. I don't stand in front of you and say, I don't care what you think about me. If I didn't care what you think about me, I probably wouldn't have put no deodorant on and I wouldn't have used mouthwash. And, you know, that's a basis. There's something to that instinct of, you know, that causes us to be respectful and mindful of other folks. So I'm not in prison to that anymore. But it was remarkable to me what I learned in that period. So anyway. Coming out of that, I really was more and more reinforced with the transformational nature of this power we've tapped into, what it is that we do, how we can transform situations that seem to be, you know, the biggest adversity or that seem to be the most shameful things in the wonderful opportunities, you know. So I'm mindful of that. So when I get in life right now, you know, and that self-will thing comes on me again, and I'm in it right now. You know, I'm in a business where it's a lot of financial uncertainty. And so I've been doing some things. And I don't care. I've been on this road 21 years, but I stick my hand in it. If something ain't happening soon, I got to make something happen. Make it happen, guy. I'm still like, I self-will run riot, self-will run riot. You know, and somebody in here might be sitting in the same place. You know, anybody in here in a situation where, okay, I know y'all talk about God got me and he didn't bring me this far to let me fall and he ain't going to give me more than I can handle. My challenge is, damn, what am I going to have to handle on this one though? I know he's not going to let me go, I know he's not going to drop me, but God, how far are you going to let me fall this time? You know, I got it. I don't want to be the one. You know how you can say, some of the time you say, the reason you work with other people is because when you get through working with them and you hear their problem, yours don't seem so serious. I don't want to be the one who is the one that you measure yours up against. I don't want to be that guy, you know. So I give him some stuff, and it's that, you know, that becomes the challenge, you know. And so I do this deal. So making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. And that should be scary if you really think about it. If you don't just do this thing by rote, and if you don't just do this thing to fit in, because I'm a fitter-inner. And I said I had taken the third step. Some people talk about all the time, well, I do the third step, I turn it over, and I take it back. I turn it over and I take it back. And the book is real clear on that. This step can have little permanent effect unless it once followed up by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of. So the way that I turn over my will and my life in the third step is to do 4 through 9. The third step is a promise to submit to the process. 4 through 9 will turn over my life. 4 through 9 and turn over my, it's no mystery, no magic. I don't have to go out and say, well, how do I do it? You know what? Somebody show me. Just don't even, God, don't, you don't need your permission. Life will be turned over. Do that. Don't require my permission. Does not require my permission. This is the how and the why of it. This is how I do it, and this is why I do it. How I do it. Quit playing God. Why? Don't work. Religion talks about there's you should, you know, religion will say you shall have no other God before me, and we'll talk about blaspheming, and we'll talk about taking God's name in vain. And religion talks about a lot of stuff, and it misses me because I'm not necessarily motivated by virtue. You know, yeah, and in this stuff it talks about, and I could want to be virtuous. In this step, in the, if you read in the third step, it talks about I could have moral and philosophical convictions galore. I could be, because I always wanted, in my life, I didn't know why we made such a big deal about going to church. I know to treat people right. I always wanted to treat people right. I knew how to treat people right. I knew right from wrong. I knew not to want to hurt people. I knew I had a big heart. I knew I liked it when people were smiling. I knew I felt better when you felt better. I knew all that. Moral and philosophical convictions of God. You don't have to tell me, love thy neighbors, thy love. That's how you were quoted in religion. I know, just treat people right. Do the right thing. You know, I knew that. Couldn't pull it off. Couldn't pull it off when what I wanted collided with what was right or best for you. What I want's gonna win. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it, you know, and the book talks about the, you know, I judge myself by my intentions while the world is judging me by my actions. That sentence just so described, Ralph. So described. Because I didn't mean to hurt you. My intention was never malicious. My intention was just straight selfish. I didn't see you. I can't see you when I'm interested, when I'm out after mine. That's what that was about. You know, so when we talk about that in that third step, you know, so. But in the third, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. So I get to that point of this is the how and the why of it. Have to quit playing God. Why? Because it don't work. Selfishness and self-centeredness, I play God whenever I want anybody or anything to be other than what it is. Now, that's just a shortcut version, and that's not necessarily always true, but it works for me as a handy guy. It works for me as a handy guy. You know, I take people and I place you in positions, and when you don't meet up to what it is, and the cold thing about it, I hear a lot of people say, in being an actor and setting the stage and writing the lines and telling you, if only you act like I wanted you to act, then I'd be happy. For me, there's a caveat. Sometimes you can act like I want you to act, and I still won't be happy. Sometimes you can act like I want you to act, and I still won't be happy. Got a couple of people in here that went to great lengths to maybe woo or seduce or do whatever it took to get somebody in their life, right? Did whatever it took, you know. 6 months later, what the hell was I thinking, you know? I don't even always know what I want you to do. Say your lines. Yeah, that's the line I wanted you to say, but it didn't come out right. You need to read, you know. So in the third step, it talks about turning my will and my life over to the care of God. Selfishness and self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Most freeing sentence in the big book for Ralph comes after that. So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. My troubles are basically of my own making. So if my troubles come out of me, if the problem is in me, the solution might be in me. Guess what? If the solution is in me, I don't have to wait for you to get better, for me to get better. If my troubles were of your making, you own me. You own me. If my troubles come out of the fact that you gossip about me, I'm in trouble because you won't continue to do that. If my troubles come out of the fact that somebody might not like me, I'm still in big trouble. If my troubles come out of the fact that folk don't always approve of me or sometimes people seem to mislead me, because a lot of my troubles that I think come from the outside are imagined anyway. You know, but if my troubles originate in you, I got to wait for you to get better, for me to get better. I'm in big trouble. But my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. They arise out of the alcoholic, and I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, although I don't usually think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Self can't overcome self. Had a phone call from a guy. I don't know. I'm going to veer away for just a moment. I was sitting here a minute ago, right before this session started. Me and Jay were sitting here talking and my phone rang. And the session was getting ready to start, so I shouldn't have taken that call. And I took this call. And a guy was on the phone. And I couldn't understand him. So I went to the back. And I still couldn't understand him, even though it got quieter. And I couldn't understand him, not because of the outside circumstances that were going on in the room. I couldn't understand him because he was sobbing uncontrollably. Now, this is a guy been in my life since about 1992. And this guy is sobbing. I saw him at a meeting 2 months ago. Hadn't seen him in about 8 years, maybe 6 years. Saw him in a meeting 2 months ago. Gave him my phone number. Haven't talked to him 6, 8 years. And he's sobbing uncontrollably. And I was thinking to myself, whew. God is God all by himself. Because I'm getting ready to do something on the third step. And this guy is sitting here and he's telling me, Ralph, I can't do this. I lost another job. My life is over. I'm through. I've been trying to do this. I can't come in here. I came back to that meeting that I saw you at because I wanted to show everybody that I could do all that. It don't take meetings for you to live a good your life right. And he wanted to show us. You want to do a demonstration to me of what your life. And so much comes to me from that sentence. Because A, nobody paid any attention to him. B, nobody knew that's what his demonstration was supposed to be. You know, everybody thought, oh, he's at a meeting in a 12-step program. He in here demonstrating what happens when you come to me. You know, he didn't make any announcement about it, but when I get so wrapped up in myself. And he said, Ralph, I was so in there to show you that. And he didn't know. You know, the book talks about what seems to be a slender reed. Slender reed. Last night, you know, Gail was talking about slender threads. And he thought he was in there to show us the benefits of living without us. Little did he know 2 months later why he was really in there. Why he was really in there. I've been looking at your number. And it ain't about me. It's me as representative of us. Me as the standing in the stead of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I need to know that there's times when I'm the only book somebody's reading. I need to know that Alcoholics Anonymous is not represented by just two letters, AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is represented by a face. Alcoholics Anonymous is represented by a hand. Alcoholics Anonymous is represented by two ears. Alcoholics Anonymous is represented by a shoulder somebody's got to lay on. And some of the time, I represent and I stand up for. You know, so when we stand in these rooms, we're Alcoholics Anonymous. We're Alcoholics Anonymous. And so he came back because he needed to reach out to alcoholics. He didn't know that. He didn't know that. Thank God that just like we saw in that video last night, that God does some things and some directing. See, God is anonymous too. He's anonymous, you know, and that's the thing. He's so anonymous, sometimes I can miss it. But when you've been around here long enough that you can see with the new eyes, you know, Chuck, the new pair of glasses, you know, it gets real clear to me, you know, and this guy is sobbing and he's crying on the phone and he's like, I just can't make it. And well, is this number a number that I can reach you at? And I'm looking at it in my phone. I'm getting ready to do something. When I get back in town, I'll call you. Yes, I think you can reach me at that number. I think my wife is going to let me back in. In this weekend of heavyweights, this weekend when it feels like I come to get knowledge and information and instruction and get full, I get reminded I'm the guy who waits for the wife to let him back in. That's why I'm in these rooms. I'm the guy who out the blue loses the job this weekend. I'm that guy. That's me. I'm the guy with the red lights flashing on Friday night over on the side of the road getting ready to get walked in. I'm that guy. And I'm also that guy that gets to that place where it does what it does well enough that I say, I'm tired of being that guy. If anybody in here is new, and you saw a guy up here last night with 50 years, and you'll see a whole parade of guys and women this weekend, and they'll be sharing about the joy of living. They'll be sharing about the miracle of recovery. And they'll make it look easy. And I want to let you know, from me to you, if you're scared, and if you're nervous, and if you're just not feeling it, and if you just don't know if this thing is here for me, trust me, even though this recovery thing looks easy now, none of us came up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if you in here and your ass is on fire, that's a good place to be for you too. You know. So I got to that point. Made that decision, stood on the precipice. You know, somebody was talking about the precipice. Standing on the third step. Gateway to a new friend. Standing on the third step. You know, and it says, we think long and hard before taking this step. Laws of the universe. Laws of the universe. You know, there are laws of nature and there are laws of science and there are laws of the universe. There are some spiritual laws that work too. You know, and some spiritual axioms, or, you know, if I take this spiritual step, there may be some spiritual consequences. And that's not that God is a scary God and the rest of this. The spiritual consequences that come once I decide to turn my will and my life over is I'm now accountable for my actions. And this thing that's up here, this God consciousness that I'm going to begin to develop is going to wear my ass out in other areas. So if you're comfortable in doing so, or if you think you're in the delusion of being comfortable with doing some of what you may want to think long and hard before taking this step. Because like I started to say before, you know, I'm really a perpetrator, and I just do stuff to fit in with people. And I needed to think about this step and the implications of this step. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. What does that mean for a guy like me? Well, what if that means if I turn my will and my life over to God, what if that means that he's going to want me to stand on the corner in a white polyester suit handing out pamphlets? What if it means that, you know? Ooh, you way too, even though, based on your experience, that would still be an improvement. I don't know why you tripping, you know. While you playing, you know, that still beats what you were doing. So anyway, but, you know, and the thing about this step, I'm going to say something, you know, and the thing about when you get up here and you get to do a workshop, you know, and I used to be, because I'm in the presence of some people that, oh, I respect their opinions and, oh, some of what I say might conflict with what they, you know, the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is we don't stamp out robots and automatons and everybody in here is the same. No, the reason why we have so many different viewpoints is because somebody is here for somebody. There's somebody in here for everybody, and there are as many different pictures and portraits of the alcoholic as there are alcoholics sitting in this room. So, you know, I don't trip if I'm not your flag. You know, it's kind of like music. It's, you know, my daughter is listening to rap music. No. You know, I like oldies and I like jazz, and some people like country western. Somebody was talking last night. And that's the same thing with our members when we get up here. So if you don't like the delivery, just think about it. Just think to yourself, that's rap. Well, somebody in here likes rap. So that one's not for you. You know, that one's not for you. You know. That's opera. Somebody else in here is listening to that and they're doing like this. You know the thing that anybody else like me, you know, if you hear a speaker or you hear somebody share and you're like, what the hell are they talking about? And then you see somebody get up and go thank them. Ooh, I really enjoy. And I'll be like, don't encourage them. You know, I'm... just telling the truth, you know. And then in my spot, and I had to deal with the fact that's for them. Why is that tripping off? Why are you tripping off the fact somebody else is getting fed somewhere else? Self is self-centered. You know, if only I'm acting, I want to set the ballet. I want all of you to put it out here the way I want you to put. Third step all over. And you know, if only I managed better, I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life. You know, so anyway, I had said all that preamble to say what I'm going to say, which is I'm going to step out here on a real big opinion of mine, because to me in that third step, there's a critical word in there. Turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And a lot of people read that and they think about it, and I ain't tripping if that's the way it is, because that's still a good thing. Turn my life over to God. You know, and that is not how I read the third step. The way I read the word third step is turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I'm not a guy that's good with money. You know, I'm not a guy that's good with money at all. I mismanage it. I spend it. I get it. I see something I like. Okay, if you need some and I have some and I like, okay, here, you know, I'm all over the place. Life unmanageable, you know. And there are money managers. There are money managers. People who manage money, right? So I see Charlie. I see Howard. They manage money. You know, I give them my money. Not you, Charlie. I give Howard my money. You know. Right? Your eyebrows went up a little too quickly. He didn't realize this was a hypothetical time. He was like, Charlie. So we give Howard my money. And he's a money manager, right? So I give Howard my money because he grows money for people. And he grows the money, and he's got my money in his hands. But he's got my money in his hands. He grows my money. Is it his money? No. It's my money. It's in his care. And my life is turned over to the care of God, as I understand it. Now, the way I understand God, and this is the way I understand God, you know, I'm a parent. I don't need my kids' life. I don't need to run it. I want to give them direction. I want to give them support. I want to give them nurturing. I want to give them everything they need. Then I want to stand back and see how my kids lead their life. And when they fall and when they stumble and when they do stuff I don't approve of, I'm not going to excommunicate them. I'm not going to say, you're not my kids anymore. You're going to come to me. Daddy going to love you anyway. You know, and somebody shared with me a long time ago, God gave us something he didn't even keep for himself. Gave us something he didn't even reserve for himself. I said, what is that? He said he gave us the choice of whether or not we wanted to return his love. God is love. He don't have no choice. He got to love us. He gave us the choice of whether or not I'm going to return his love. And he loves me so much, he won't impose his will on mine. He'll let me act a fool. He'll let me go out. He'll let me kill. He loves me so much. That's what separates us. That's what makes us who we are. You know, I don't want to lose. That's what separates us from dogs and animals. He gives us, free will. And he loves us so much, he won't impose his will on mine. You know, so in doing that third step, what it is for me, God is not going to make me Bob Darrell. God is not going to make me somebody. God is going, when I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand him, I'm going to now be enhanced to be the best Ralph White I can be. I'm going to be the best Ralph White I can be. I mean, we got parents in here right now, and some of you have more than one child. Your kids ain't all the same. Who wants them to be the same? I want Rain to be the best rain she can be, and I want River to be the best river she can be. And I love my kids as they are. You know, so for me, you know, to wrap my head around this God idea, sometimes I have to put it like that. And I know humanizing them sometimes is doing a disservice, but for me, sometimes it's the best way I can see it. And I try to stay away from that, but what I've gotten from this third step, what I've gotten from this power you guys introduced me to, what I've gotten from this relationship that I formed, never wanted a relationship, maybe a belief, never wanted a relationship, but what I have from this relationship that I formed is one that's personal. It's one that's personal for me. And I started that personal journey. You know, I started it for real standing on that third step decision. That I'm going to make a decision and turn my will and my life over to a better manager than me. I don't manage money well. I need a manager in the money. I don't manage my life so well. But and why would I turn my money over to Howard? Probably because Mike has turned his over to him and Bob has turned his over to him. See, I'm going to do some investigation because I don't have a lot, but it's mine, you know, and same with my life. It ain't a lot, but it's mine, you know, and I want to know that I'm turning it over to something that's trustworthy and reliable, and that's what I do in the third step. I'm in a fellowship of men and women, and they told me this is who we turned our life over to. You know, we sat up here, we turned our life over to a manager, and we've been getting results. See, I want to know, well, did Howard lose the money for, what happened with it? Was there a return? You know, was there a, what kind of return? I want to know. And so men and women in this fellowship have been showing me return on investment. Been showing me return on investment. Invested my life in this third step. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of this power. I've been getting a return. I ain't made that phone call about my old lady putting me. I've been getting a return. I have not had to be escorted out of a workplace smelling of alcohol, cussing. I've been getting a return, you know. I have not made it home with a paycheck in a long time. Been getting return on investment. New man, new person, you know. Been getting return on investment. And, you know, and the way that I do this, for me, the third step is a powerful experience. I think long and hard about it because I want to know what's in it for me. I want to know what it is that's going to happen on the other side of that. I didn't have to think all that long and hard about it for me. I think the depths to which this disease takes you and the will is the level of willingness I brought. This last time I came, I wasn't really fighting too much or nothing. You know, like I said, alcohol had its way with me. I was in a real bad way. Tom alluded to it too last night. You know, it's some paradoxes in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the paradoxes that I like the most about it is this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, the better off your chances of staying. And I was in a bad way, and I rushed at him. No questions and no, you know. So I started that, and I get on my knees. 1987, had the opportunity, get intrigued with this book. You know, I'm a guy that when I get in something, I like to know about it. I like to know everything about it. You know, I'm from 60s and 70s, you know. I want to know what to blend and what to mix. And, you know, I was kind of a mixologist with drinks. And I was a guy that subscribed to High Times. And, you know, I study my craft when I get in something, you know. And when I got into this recovery process, I'm hungry and I'm greedy too. And some people came to a marathon and they were sharing the steps of recovery in a way that caught my attention. And I got interested in it. And I asked some people to do it that way with me. And in 1987, in November, we started meeting around my mother's dining room table, about 8-10 people. And we started meeting around my mother's dining room table and we started going through this book, page by page, line by line. And it lit me up. And as much as I get from this book, and we've been doing cracking this book open with a different group of people every year since then. We go through chapter 7 working with others. We go through it with a group of people. Then we stop for a month and we start again. And this November we started up for our 20th year consecutively of doing this big book workshop. And I love what Tom said about it, because I'm a guy that stays conscious that, you know, God is not contained in 164 pages. We talk about our program is outlined in these first 164 pages. God can't be contained by book covers. He's a living, breathing entity and works in my life. And the program Alcoholics Anonymous is a living program. It's a vital program. It's dynamic. It don't stay the same. And I live this. I don't go through this process to just go through this process to go through this process. You know, I love the opportunity to share with people. And the way I do my third step as a result of that is I get with a group of people and we get on our knees and we do it as a group. And we say as a group, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, the victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I do it with a group of people. And I do it on my knees. And I do it holding hands. And there's a source and a surge of power that goes with that prayer. And I think about that prayer carefully. I offer myself to thee, me. I come up here in a bad way, in a bad condition. I was 33 years old and I had given up hope on life. I didn't know where my family was living. I didn't know what school my little girl was enrolled in. I hadn't been to work in so long, I didn't know if I was even employable anymore. You know, I offer myself to thee. I was going in purses on a regular basis. I wouldn't look in the mirror the last 2 years that I was out there. I couldn't believe what I had become and what I had done. Me, just as I am, just like I am. Churches ask for you to go through some kind of conversion. Do you believe? Do you accept it? Just like I am. God, I offer myself this piece of me, this piece of man. Do something with me. Build something out of me. That's a powerful promise that's implied in that. Do something with this. Work with me. Build with me and do with me as you will. Have your way with me. Just like alcohol did. Had its way with me. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I'm stuck up in here. I live in my head. I don't live in my life. In my head, I don't know where the mortgage is coming from next month. In my head, you know, oh man, me and my wife been together a long time and we don't shake it. In my head, and this is, but in my life, if I live in my life and not in my head, most of the day, I'm fat. I ain't never missed a meal. I ain't never slept outside. I go where I want to go. I do what I want to do. I buy what, you know, but I live in my head and I miss it. I'm the kind of guy that will sit up and if I'm not careful, because I get nostalgic and I remember stuff, and I'm the kind of guy, the memory of an event or a time will outweigh the reality of it. I don't want my memories to be more than my reality. So I save a moment. So I'll be thinking back on, remember when you were in state line back, and I'll forget that, but you were up in your room tripping up, oh, what's going on? You were doing that. No. Living my life, not in my head. I try to live in my life. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do. Take away my difficulties. Why? The victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with that power. So, you know, God will work with me. And everybody in here is uniquely qualified to do something that only we can do. And he works with us through our adversity. You know, that's the only thing. And so everybody gets equipped. If you're sitting out there and you're new and you're wondering, what do I have to bring to the table? What do I have to offer somebody? Well, check this out. This club that you're a member of now, your greatest asset is your experience. And adversity. adversity. So everybody is going to get that. See, check this. Having experiences, you know, having experience is fine. It's getting experience that hurts so much. Somebody in there just getting experience, you know. Somebody in there just getting experience. And when I had experience, that's what I'm armed with. You know, for me to sit down in front of a sponsee and say, yeah, I know what it's like to have the IRS come after you. Check this out. I had it happen. After the fact, that kind of stuff sounds good to be sure. But when you in it, somebody in here going to share with a sponsee what it's like to have a broken heart. When you in it, it becomes an asset. Take away my difficulties, you know. And so I always say, you know, I believe God can handle anything. Well, guess what, Ralph? Sometimes you got to be the message you carry. If you say God can handle anything, guess what? Sometimes you got to have something for him to handle. That's all. That's all. And so I stand on this new way of living, standing on that third step. And I just say to myself, you know, the key for that third step, two keys. One, being convinced that my life run on my will can hardly be a success. If you successfully run in your life, don't worry about taking the third step. For the two or three of you who are not successfully running your life, third step is you know, that's a design for that. That one right there will put me in touch with a new manager, a new employer. You know, it'll put me in touch with a manager that does for me what I can't do for myself. You know, I live in you and I live my life on that. Well, how do I do it again? Don't trip off that. Third step, promise to submit to the process. 4 through 9 will turn over my will in my life in spite of me. It'll do it no matter what. He don't need my permission. He does need my cooperation. You know, I am so grateful that I've had the opportunity to come up here, you know, and share with you guys this weekend. You know, I following up Tom Ivester is an intimidating task. Thank God. You put a day between it, Bob, so everybody can remember, you know. I'm one of the ones that, you know, I was listening last night. I'm one of the ones that I never say I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, it's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.